Welcome to Picnic Climbers, a podcast for those who love getting outside,
going on epic adventures,
or chill ones,
and don't take themselves too seriously. Join us, Nate and Mo,
as we share our escapades into the great outdoors.
And don't forget the beer, eh? Hello, Picnic Climbers. Welcome to another episode. We are really looking forward to this one.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke a couple of weeks ago about our journey living in a van in New Zealand and the few months that we spent down there. We have since made contact with our good friends, Pete and Emily. And Monica's going to talk more about Pete and Emily here in a moment. But we are very excited to interview them today about their tiny living situation.
They're more legit than we were. We were like, let's road trip and do this for a few months. But they've gone full in.
Yeah, we played at the idea for a little bit.
Mm.
It got cold and then we gave up.
Nate does not like the cold. Monica does not like the rain. We were like, this is not a good fit.
Honestly, I'm impressed though, because vans are tiny, tiny, tiny. So, you know.
Yeah, okay. So we had a tiny home on wheels. They do not have a tiny home on wheels. They have a tiny home and she floats. So this is a couple that we met in the UK. They're in West Midlands currently. So Pete is a freelance illustrator working also currently as a teaching assistant in a school. And Emily is an artist of all sorts. I'm sure she can tell you more about that later. But she also is a nanny in the Midlands. So they both work with kids. And they live on a canal boat.
Describe a canal boat for our Canadian listeners who would have no context of what that is.
Oh goodness, it's long and skinny. It's like, it looks tiny. You'd look at it and you think, no way can people live on that. But yeah, it's pretty much, do you guys know the dimensions of your boat?
42 foot by 6 foot.
14 foot by 6 foot.
By
there you
6
go.
Foot? Oh, that's narrower than I thought.
Yeah. But we're short, so we can sleep
so
across it.
So longer than a van, but yeah, very narrow. You guys can stand up in it, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know whether Nate would be able to.
Fair enough. Yes, they are both quite short. These lovely friends of ours are little, so maybe it would be different for Nathan. But they've gone and made it even more challenging for themselves because they have a tiny dog who wreaks all kinds of havoc in their tiny boat.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you can share some stories about that. But they've got the cutest little dog named Oatly, who is adorable and gets into lots of trouble from the looks of things.
Can we just move, just before we jump in, again, we're conscious of our, again, Canadian listeners, but very little context for canal boats or even for what a canal is.
Yeah.
So I'll just go very briefly mm-hmm. to this. So early industrial revolution in the UK, before the rail network covered the entire country, the best way to transport goods, generally coal, from the Midlands to factories of London and the north, wherever else, was canals. And so the country dug thousands and thousands of miles of canal that are, what, about 4 to maybe 6 to 8 foot deep in really not deep. They're maybe 15 to 20 foot wide, relatively straight, unless where they need to, channels, lots of locks to go up and down where needed. And they crisscross all over the UK, and they've maintained them even though they are used so much less now than they used to be, and people like Pete and Emily are wonderfully able to make the most of it and take advantage of it.
So I mean, you run along canal routes all the time, don't you, because it's nice and flat and straight and you can get up quite a pace, and they've got tons of nice walking routes. And my only experience with canal boats is I went on a party boat for a hen do. And we floated kind of up the stream and then back again and got off in central Birmingham, which was hilarious. It was good fun. That's the only time I've been on one, other than the Black Country Museum for the UK people. You can check out what life used to be like, but their boat is much cuter and much more livable than the old ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. That's a good little history lesson.
So start off, guys. Like, tell us about your living space to begin with. So what have you got? How is it organized? How is it set up? And what does it
look like?
Yeah.
Paint a picture.
Yeah, so we have like, in terms of talking about a boat, you've got the bow and the stern. So the bow is the kind of the front of the boat and the stern is the back where you steer. So when we're talking about that, that gives you an idea of where we're talking about. So we generally go in from the stern, and as you come in, there's a bathroom on your left. It's tiny, but actually quite big in comparison to other ones. You can carry on.
Yeah, for sure. It's got a little little shower that's not yet working. just the rest of the space is kind of open plan all in one.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a smaller boat than a lot of other people who have like separate bedrooms and stuff like that. So we've got kind of a kitchen going along one side and then a kind of breakfast bar on the other side. And then moves into our little living room area, which the log burner, which is like definitely the heart of the home.
Yeah,
which keeps us warm, and we just had so many nights just around the log burner. And then beyond then, there is our bed, which has like some underbed storage. We went for quite a wide bed, so it's king size width and 5'9" in length. because we're both less than 5'9". Yeah, and so that's got storage underneath, and we use that as kind of a settee, sofa situation as well.
And then you've got the bow, which we have two doors going out to. Mm-hmm. And we have an apple tree out there, and we're growing some salad, and yeah.
Yeah, little garden going on.
Little garden going on, as well as a little garden on the roof as well.
So is that space, is that big enough to hang out in? Could you sit and have breakfast outside?
So our stern is bigger than our bow because we've got something called a cruiser stern, which means we have quite a big area, so we could definitely we're looking to get a little table and chairs and could definitely have like 4 or 5 people sat out the back.
Okay.
But the front's a bit smaller. Me and you could sit out there.
Yeah.
Currently it's slightly full of random items.
We're still renovating.
Yeah. once those are cleared, definitely.
Yeah, so it's like a cruiser stern, which is kind of like the party boat situation, so you can get like a bunch of people with you as you're driving along. Yeah, so it's fun.
Cute.
Yeah, but we're planning, if we're entertaining, we'll probably like do it on top of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
We have quite a flat top to our boat, and so you can all sit along it. Like,
we're planning to have like big feasts with a long
table, festoon lights. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That is very cute. Oh, amazing. So yeah, even with the tiny space, you just have to get a bit creative to have people over, and that's still part of the planning.
Yeah, definitely. And you're very weather dependent, just mm-hmm. full stop. So entertaining is just one of those things where you have to do it when it's not raining or get umbrellas, you know?
Oh, yeah. I guess that's one of the things we found with tiny living. The weather impacts you on a whole new level, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Very in touch with the seasons, yeah.
All right, so let's backtrack a bit. Now that we kind of have an idea of what we're talking about, what made you want to live tiny? Is this something you've always dreamed of? Was it kind of for convenience sake? Why the move? Because this is recent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So we moved in September, and we got married in July, and then kind of in between we're living in an Airbnb while we got this ready.
Yeah, it's a bit mad. I wouldn't recommend it to all newlyweds, to be honest.
You just can't escape each other, can you?
You can't escape each other.
No,
you
argue that's what all we did, isn't it? We lived in someone's basement for the first few months, and then we lived in a van.
Yeah.
That was our first year.
You know, you're made through the fire, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Stronger now.
Yeah. So we actually, we've kind of always like watching tiny home videos and stuff like that.
Mm.
And there is something about like the small living lifestyle that we have always been attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we didn't really think about it that much until your younger sister had a dream that we brought an old rundown narrowboat and did it up and moved on to it. And we like never thought about it before. And we were just looking at each other and we're like, that sounds fun.
Let's do it.
I love that.
Did she share that dream with you as if it was prophetic, or was it just, haha, guys, guess what?
She is a bit of a prophetic dreamer.
But she definitely shared it in a very like, I just had a random dream. And we were like, I think that's
we'll take it from the Lord, yeah. So, I mean, that is our life philosophy, if we're honest. Just, you know, go for it.
Yeah. Why not?
You know, what could go wrong?
How
turns out
could
a lot.
It go wrong?
So much can go wrong.
Can't wait to hear. Okay, so what was the process then? You had your sister had this dream. You thought, hey, that could be fun. Walk us through.
Facebook Marketplace. Honestly,
amazing.
That's
how you can find cushions. Yeah, you can find cushions, sofas, and narrowboats.
Yeah. Yeah, so we got it off Facebook Marketplace, which it was a bit of a rogue decision, and we went to visit it, and it needed a lot of work. Mm-hmm. Our boat's from the early 80s, and it was rusting and pretty bad condition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should have had a pre-survey done and we didn't, so we completely took a chance. So actually, in reality, if our, thankfully, thank God, our hull was fine. If our hull had been as rusted through as it should have been, it would have cost us $5,000 to $8,000 to replace it.
Oh my goodness.
So we took a $5,000 to $8,000 shot in the dark.
Yeah. Wow.
and bought it.
We mainly chose it because
yeah,
the windows are really big compared yeah. to some narrow boats. So some only have the little portholes, and light is like right. super important to us. So we just came in, and although it was like super ugly, like the light was really pretty. So we're like, yeah, this is the one. It was the
it's
first.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's the first and only one we looked at. Also to clarify that, so very little research. We bought it 2 weeks after we saw it, I think.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's impulsive decisions.
You're gonna
for
jump
you.
2 feet.
Yeah. Right. Just you got to do it.
Looking back, then, would you have done more research? Because I know you're going to share that you actually put tons of work into it.
Yeah, I think we were really, like, I would say lucky, but I think God really provided for us. But I would definitely have done more research. Like, it really could have gone wrong.
More than it has.
And we bought her thinking the engine was fine, and it wasn't. She isn't fine. So that was
she
one thing.
Fine.
That, she's not okay. So that's the main reason. Like, the thing they say to you when you buy a boat is make sure the engine and the hull are fine. And we thought the engine was fine. We didn't check the hull was fine. Thank God it is. So yeah, that yeah, would have done more research.
One out of two. Okay. Fair enough. Okay, so you've bought the boat and it needed a lot of work, yes?
Mm-hmm.
So was it like you kind of, as you started doing things, that you realized as you went along that there was more and more that you needed to do? Like, how did you, I guess, prioritize the work that you did?
Mm-hmm. So the week before we got married, me and my best friend Will came to try and get it a bit ready for when we came back from our honeymoon. I'm quite optimistic and kind of thought I'd have it all ready within a week for Emily to move on to. Like, that was not the situation at all. And as we began, took the carpet up, and then under the carpet it was super soggy, and we were like, oh no, and then realized that underneath the floorboards was just filled with water, and like it was, so we had to replace loads of the like bottom layer of floorboards, work out where the leak was coming from. It was the water tank and not a hole in the hull, thankfully. But yeah, and then the more we took away and the more we ripped out, just the more problems there were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of damp and mold and rust and
yep.
All things you'll kind of expect, but it was hiding it quite well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The people who lived there before lived there for 7 years and they didn't cook at all on the boat. I don't think they showered on the boat. They basically didn't really like properly live on the boat from what we could tell. So I didn't think they had any idea of all the problems that there were that happened when we tried to actually live on it, you know, cook and use a shower and all that kind of stuff. It just, yeah, so many problems. Mostly cosmetic, but also some structural issues, like the water tank and the engine that we just weren't expecting at all.
Fair enough. So you guys have done a lot of DIY. Have you done it all yourself then? Did you have to get professionals in for everything? How much of a learning curve was it?
Yeah, so YouTube has become our best friend.
We love YouTube.
Yeah, so we've done most of it ourselves. We ripped everything out.
Yeah.
We've had lots of help from very kind friends, so thank you. Ripped it out, replaced the floorboards, repainted it, installed the log burner ourselves. I built the kitchen myself.
I built the shower.
Oh yeah, you did tiling. Like tiling and did the so we had people in to do gas and electricity.
Those are the two things that can kill you, and we were like, nah.
Go professional for the things that can kill you. Wise. Fair enough. Okay, so then you did all the structural stuff, and how long did that take before it was livable?
So we booked the Airbnb for 4 weeks.
Yep.
And then had to extend it by another couple of weeks.
Yep.
Because it just wasn't ready. And then we moved onto the boat. And we still had no electricity,
gas,
water, or gas or heating.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Okay. So you were pretty much camping. You had a roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But then gradually, like within a few weeks of that, we started to get those things sorted.
Yeah. We had we had lights by the second night we were camping, then gas, then water. And then a week after we moved on, we we moved the boat to where we are now.
You moved the boat. So tell us about moving the boat. How did that go?
Oh my goodness. So, we never driven a narrow boat before.
Right. You don't.
You guys really went into this so blindly. I love it.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
I have this amazing belief that I can do absolutely anything I put my mind to.
You can, mate.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Like, it's the way I was raised, but.
And I have the belief that Peter can do anything and that I trust him, and this is where it's led us. So the first part of the journey actually was beautiful, wasn't it? Oh my goodness, I just sat on the roof and you drove. Okay, basically it was beautiful because I didn't do anything, but...
Oh, I love those journeys.
Right? But we did break down twice.
Yeah.
No.
And have to have the mechanic come out and rescue us a couple of times because the day before we left, there was it was discovered that we have a problem with our heat exchanger. So our engine's heat because movement, heat. Right. Mm-hmm. And you have this thing called a heat exchanger, which pumps in ours is a raw water one, right? Which cools down the engine. Unfortunately, ours has a crack in, so it
doesn't cool down the engine.
It just pushes water out of it. So the whole way there, we just had to stop about once an hour if it reached 120 degrees, at which point you could hear the engine boiling. So it would be like, and we'd have to stop.
Yeah.
So that was really fun.
Yeah.
And it meant that we went very slowly, which was honestly, I'm making it sound awful. And at some moments it was really hard and like we cried. But at some moments, oh my goodness, that's why people do boat life. It is the most beautiful, slow, wonderful thing to just be going along. And you can just, you're in the middle of nowhere. Because as you were saying, like canals were built, you know, out of the Industrial Revolution. And that means that there are canal systems where there aren't roads and there aren't trains. They're completely abandoned. There often aren't even footpaths beside them in some of the really abandoned parts. And so you're just in the middle of nowhere. It's just wild. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
But we also did cry.
Yeah. And like we cashed in.
Good with the bad.
Yeah.
And you had good weather then, yeah?
Yeah.
Because it was during the summer, so that was planned.
Yes. Yeah. We went, it took us 9 days to get to where we are now.
It should have taken 5.
Yeah.
But we were going slowly and we broke down twice. Like, narrow boats go slow at the best of times, but we were being overtaken by other narrow boats, which shows you how slow you were
going. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? Good times.
Aw, that's cute, though. Oh, okay. So then you got it to where you've got it, and it's been there ever since, yeah? So you kind of moored for the winter.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so now you've got your basics, you've got electricity, you've got water, and then you've just been kind of doing the surface stuff ever since then. Is that right?
Yeah. We're just on our last few items. We're actually planning to start continuously cruising in May. Mm-hmm. So right now we're in a marina where there's a shower because we don't have a shower on the boat and like that's just not very sociable, is it? So
hasn't really mattered the last few months though.
Lockdown. No, to be fair. We could have not watched, but we have. Don't worry. So there's just like a few more things left and then we're going to go out back again.
So are you going to put a shower on the boat? Is that?
Yeah.
So you built the shower. Yeah. We just haven't connected, I haven't connected the waste outlet bit yet.
Cool.
And so I need to do that basically.
Basically, you have to angle grind through a metal beam that goes underneath the boat.
In a really inconvenient place.
To put the waste pipe underneath. So that's why it's taking us a bit longer. And there's just like a couple of other things. You want to redeck the back and the front.
Yeah. And like because we're going off grid, we'll be using entirely like solar power and
engine power.
So we need to change a bit of the electrics again to cope with that and get a different fridge and things. So just got a few things to do. But then
we're
getting
there.
I'd say we're 85% there. I've been saying we're 80% there for a good 5 months.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So I reckon we're above 80% now.
Do you think?
Yeah.
85. Nice.
How many solars? Talk about your solar power. So it's for your solar when you go off grid.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just need like one panel? Do you need multiple panels? Is that going to sort of take away from your vision of a long table on the top of the boat? Or how does that part work?
Sure. So thankfully, our boat is quite long. So there would be plenty of space, even if we had two or three solar panels. Currently, we've just got one. And it's a low-level solar...
It's a low light.
Low light, that's it. Mm-hmm. Which is great in the summer. Over the winter, it didn't do much for us, if we're honest.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. even though it's supposed to. I think the good thing is when you're moving anywhere, your engine charges up your batteries. So we've got two leisure batteries currently, but we're going to double it to four so that we have more power in the bank. And on a sunny day, the solar panel, just the one, will completely solve those. On a like really horrible day, we might have to run the engine or move a little bit just to top them up. But we'll see how it goes. We might need to get another solar panel after a bit if it's really not working. But hopefully.
There's one boat on where we are that's entirely solar panelled, which is amazing. Wow. It's got an electric engine and everything. But that's really rare. Most boats are, diesel engine powered to go. And then the engine powers the batteries and the batteries power your 12-volt system. And then people have something called an inverter, which transforms your energy from 12-volt into 240. So you can then plug in your classic 240 plug.
For our blenders and laptops.
So we have just a tiny inverter because we have very low power usage. So we don't need a huge inverter or anything. Some of them can be a grand. Some people spend crazy money. But we have a £60 one.
But that seems so convenient. It seems that you can just get on with normal life for the most part. Hey, so talk us through some more logistics. You talked us through heating. You've got your central stove.
Yeah.
Showering is coming.
Yeah.
What about working? Are you guys hanging on to your day jobs then? I guess not when you're going around touring. Talk us through that bit.
For sure. So you don't actually have to move that much to be a continuous cruiser. So you can move a mile or so and then on again the next time. And that's once every 2 weeks. So we're hoping that we'll be able to move within the vicinity of being able to get to train stations and stuff to be able to go to our jobs. And then in summer, because we both work with kids, we get 6 weeks off. So that would be major cruising time.
Yeah, which is kind of why we planned it. Yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned continual cruiser. Just for people who don't know about the canal system, why is that? Why is that a thing that you want? What is that?
It's cheaper one way. So if you've got a permanent mooring or in a marina, you have more fees. Whereas if you're a continuous cruiser, so moving a little bit once every 2 weeks, you don't. It's about £600 a year, which makes your living costs a lot lower.
Yeah, so the marina we're in right now is £4,000 a year, which is still extremely low rent, compared to most other, a house, but it's still obviously more expensive than £600. So definitely a positive to just going out and, just being. And also it's, so in a marina, you're kind of stacked like sardines. Ours isn't super full, so we have space on one side of us to just look out, but on the other side of us, you're window to window. So that's, you don't exactly want that all the time.
No.
Whereas we get to explore more and see beautiful wildlife and things a bit more once we'll be out.
And you know that feeling when you wake up camping and you can hear the birds? It's just a really special feeling. That's what you get every day when you're continuously cruising.
That's glorious.
Lovely.
Yeah. So
you're selling it very well.
A few bumps in the beginning, but it looks amazing now. Okay, so was it what you expected then? You've been in there for a few months. You're 85% of the way there.
Mm.
Is it what you expected? Boat life?
It's hard work.
It is hard work. I think the winter, we moved in autumn and then had the winter. I think this winter has been very cold here in England. For England anyway.
Not Canadians, we're sorry in advance. It's not that cold.
It's okay. It's unusual anyway.
So it's snowed it snowed every week here where we are for 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And we get blocked in because we're in the middle of the countryside and there's a massive drive. So we get blocked in. The canal was frozen over.
Our water pipes froze so that we didn't have running water, which was a bummer.
We had to have the fire going constantly and it's amazing. It keeps us really warm, but it's expensive to run a fire for that long, especially because there's regulations around what kind of wood you can burn. So you can only burn kiln-dried logs, really.
Yeah.
Because anything else, if you go in forage for logs and twigs, it will damage your chimney.
And we didn't have time to collect loads of logs and dry them out over the year because we just moved on, so we're buying in a lot of logs. We loved it. We have loved it,
yeah,
and we definitely do love the way of life.
yeah
and we do spend more time outside and like
the community. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Like I've just moved to a new city. Like Peter has been here for a bit longer, but even knowing people here, we can't see anyone.
Yeah.
But we're surrounded by boaters and it's like a different world here. Like, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really got us through all the lockdowns and stuff. Just having other boaters and seeing people with their dogs and things and like there's a real sense of support and community.
Yeah, so like we've met way more people than we would have done if we were living in a house in the middle of the city, you know?
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I might have imagined you'd be even more isolated, but that's so cool.
I think because it is hard work living on a boat, everybody looks out for each other. Mm-hmm. It's quite old, I don't know, it's quite old-fashioned neighbour kind of attitude, as in like, you know, if you need sugar, you just go around to someone's, you're like, can I have some sugar? You know, it's that kind of the way it used to be, I guess.
Yeah. What's the demographic of the other boaters? Like, you guys are obviously quite a young couple. Like, are other people in this, like, similar age? Are they older than you? Like, what are we looking at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a mixture. I think you said something interesting, that narrow boaters tend to always be running towards something or running away from something. which means that everyone you meet has a great story.
Yeah.
Which one are you?
Well, we hope we're running towards something. So there is a lot of older people, often divorced people who maybe didn't get enough money to get a house and so ended up on a boat. So that is actually quite a majority of people. Yeah. But there is also people like us, like younger people who are kind of done with a conventional lifestyle that they've been sold of getting a mortgage and having to, I don't know.
Yeah. Not having the free, just getting a job because you have to pay off your mortgage. And it's just all a have to, should have, because you've got this money expectation on you. And actually there isn't that so much with a boat. Like,
no. Oh, you're not even fixed to one place.
No, which is amazing. Like, yeah, that's a definite advantage. So maybe we are slightly running away from things, slightly.
maybe a bit of both.
A bit of both.
And that's allowed.
Yeah, it's like similar to the van life type community. Mm. Lots of people who are after a slower pace of life, or so we've met some people very similar to us as well, which has been amazing.
It's quite fun to meet people like from all different places, all different ages, all different stories, but you all generally have something in common, because otherwise you wouldn't have chosen this lifestyle.
No kidding.
It's quite cool to meet people who you're like, actually these people are, I don't know, there's an authenticity that I really love about people. Mm-hmm. You know?
That does sound dreamy. Okay, so those are some of the best bits.
One thing that I'm interested in, just kind of you were saying that, so you say like authenticity. Now, one of the things that we found when we were living in the van in New Zealand is like, I guess partly the idea of like simplicity is well, and I don't know, would you say that there is a simplicity to life as well, or is it more just like the busyness of like a normal life, like you say, with work and mortgage and all of that, is just taken up with the challenge of just doing daily life?
I don't know, it depends on the day how I view it, but I think there is something very simple about it that is nice, and there's a rhythm to the day that I get up and I chop some logs and I make a fire, and then like we make some breakfast, we check the water tanks full. There's a nice rhythm two things, and we know exactly how much water we're using. We know, you know, like it's just more in touch with things that you're quite distant from in a...
Yeah, I used to think that simplicity was just like, you know, a stripped back life, you know, you only have a few things. But like, I think you're right, Nate, it's probably more the latter, that it's more like it becomes more about the simple things of life and doing them, unless it's not stripped back. It's just that you are just way more involved with your everyday life needs, like water and, you know, heating and things like that. It's all very tactile. Like you can see it, you need to sort it. You're responsible for it. And that is really hard work. But I think that actually is something really beautiful. And I think that is, I think what I've come to realize simplicity more is living on a boat is being in touch with all those things that are really hard work, but that just come naturally in a house that you have to think about way more in a boat, but that your life does get filled up with those things, but it's actually quite nice.
We found that, didn't we? And it was the hardest thing, but also one of the nicest things. It's just so back to basics. And it was your priorities are food, water, warmth, and shelter, and it did make you feel like you're just kind of camping long term. That simplicity of camping, like camping's not easy, it's you're pretty much looking after those things all the time: food, water, shelter. But that's beautiful.
I mean, we were in the position where we didn't have to work when we did it. And I think that probably made it for us more nicer. Like we really didn't feel like we had to rush anything. Do you guys find that, is it a challenge balancing living this lifestyle, living on a boat with having jobs and needing to, I mean, turn up at a school, or turning up at someone's house and being, I suppose, a certain degree of presentable.
Yeah, I definitely struggle with that. The first few weeks of my job, I used to just turn up in the stuff that I wear around a boat, which is like my muddiest trousers and like my jumper with holes in. And the kids were just like, "You always look so scruffy." And I was like, "Ooh." I think I've just got, like, you know, they always do. And I was like, I think I've just got used to like the way I look around boats because everything gets ruined. So, yeah, I can't remember the relevance of what I was saying, but. Yeah, I find that challenging.
I think as well, I've only recently started working at the school. I think it was really good for us, especially while we were doing major renovations, to have a bunch of time where we weren't working so much. I mean, you're working 10 hours a week and I wasn't working. So we're able to just like get things done. And now I only work 4 days a week and I have another day off that I can get boat things done, do some of the like routine things, as well as hopefully some of the progress things.
Yeah, and also like I think for some couples, like for you guys, like that was really connecting and stuff, and I think it is for a few months, but actually we found it quite nice. We've spent how many months? We spent like 8 months 24/7 together, so it's actually been quite nice to have jobs, because then you're like like
see other people. Yeah,
you know, making your marriage work sometimes does include not seeing each other all the time.
We've only got one living space. Like, I couldn't even go into a different room if we fell out, other than the bathroom. Like, I mean,
I did do that. I sat in the shower once. Yeah, keeping it real.
Just need a bit of space sometimes. Yeah. So, do you think that's one of the challenges?
Like, we're both extroverts, but. We're definitely less extroverted than we thought.
I think in a normal situation, you wouldn't have to communicate your space needs so much because you kind of get them naturally. Whereas, especially the time where we were like together all of the time, we didn't get it naturally. So we've had to learn to communicate and be aware of our needs a lot better. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So just a lesson in communication, really.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, as I said, you learn through the fire, right? Mm. Yeah.
But as we ease out of lockdown, you guys will be on the move a bit more, and you'll have feasts on the roof, so I'm sure including more people in your life will be it'll be wonderful for all of us, won't it?
Definitely.
Okay. Bit of a random question here. What did your family say? What did they think? Were they so on board?
I think, like, they were just quite supportive, weren't they?
Peter just does things and doesn't ask his mum what she thinks.
Sometimes that's just, best.
He just goes for it. I remember when we rang her up and said that we were engaged, she was like, "Oh, how lovely!" But she was shocked. Like, that is not... that's just... I think you just tell your mother you're doing things. You don't really ask her, do you, to be honest?
I mean, she's...
was very supportive, yeah. I mean, she's lived a cool life, so...
Yeah, I mean, your family... were supportive as well, weren't they?
Again, I think it's your attitude of just we're doing it that doesn't invite much questioning.
Yeah.
I've always been like, I don't know, what do my parents call me?
Like a free spirit.
Free spirited. I don't like to do things exactly the same as everyone else. So I think they were just like, yeah, that fits. Okay. Like as a child, I read a lot of like, I don't know, adventure books and kind of. I really like the Famous Five series where they live on a canal boat, which is a bit of a weird. Yeah, they live like there's a tiny living famous, not Famous Five, no, Ina Blyton. Ina Blyton. Yeah, so good. So yeah, I think they were just like, well, that makes sense. That just fits with Emily's character. So yeah, I think
if we'd had different parents, it may have been more struggle to convince them, but we didn't really have to. And like your dad loves model making.
Yeah.
And, intricate model of our boat.
Yeah,
so he
was
convinced him that way.
Yeah, I think our friends were a bit more surprised. Like a lot of people, we told they thought it was a joke, and then we bought the boat, and they were like, "We thought you were joking." Like,
that is amazing. That's good though. So you didn't actually have to convince anyone too much that this was a good idea. And it's gone well, right?
Yeah. All ends well, right?
Okay, so going forward then, you're going to tour this summer. Is this a long-term thing past then? Is this like how you want to do your whole life?
I think we love it, and there will be things that we're ways we will learn to live because of it that we will do for the rest of our lives. I
refuse to have a baby on here. Yeah.
Yes, that would be a challenge.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's where I draw the line.
Okay, so maybe short term, depending on when that happens.
Yeah, depending on when that happens. Yeah, no, I don't know about you. Peter's convinced we can bring it. He's like, oh, they'll only be small. And I'm like, they grow.
They are small. I mean, maybe I'm not the best to talk to about this because we do things differently than other people. But I mean, he's with me all the time anyway. I mean, he sleeps in the bed with us sometimes. He naps beside me. You don't need that much.
No, I mean, for the first, well, even really still now, 5 months on for us, like, he only really knows two rooms of the house.
Yeah.
And even then, when we put him in another room, it's for the...
It's like a vacation. Yeah, like,
and also just for such little things. Most of the time, we're either in our living room or he's in the bedroom in his little next to me next to us.
Now, I'm not saying it wouldn't be very challenging.
I'm sure it would be very challenging. I think probably, and I don't know, maybe one of the most challenging things would be, like, you have a lot more washing that you need to do with a baby. And I'm not sure quite what your washing facilities are like, but we go through a heck of a lot of little cloths and cloth nappies and all sorts.
But we also have made decisions like cloth nappies that you wouldn't need to do. But yeah, it's going to be waste or washing. Pick one.
Yeah,
anyway, that's not what this is about.
No, it's good to hear. Like, I like the way
when we were
it.
Traveling, though, I was trying to convince Nate that we could totally do, babies and a van, because we thought it might be longer term, and he was unconvinced about the babies full stop, let alone babies and van life. But I managed to find so many other people that were doing it, and I showed him Instagram accounts that people have a baby on it, like living in a van full time. And I think it was fine with a baby. It was more when they got to be toddlers and children that it actually became very tricky when they start moving. And then all of a sudden, it's probably like having a puppy in a small space. Can make messes. But anyway, I digress. We can move on.
No, it's all good. That probably is my line there. But cool to think that you think we could do it. That is interesting. Mm. That is interesting.
I just think it would be really fun to have a child that's like, thinks it's normal.
Like, this is a normal house. This is a normal way of life. That would be a lot of years with a child on a boat for them to grow up thinking that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think we have a couple of like visions of what we want to do in the future.
Yeah, we are massive dreamers. So, like, not that we're already on to next things, but we're dreaming, we're visioning. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to live more environmentally conscious than we do now. Just because boats are incredible and our carbon footprint is way lower than if we're in a house, but we still have a diesel engine. We have like gas, you know, cooker and heater. So yeah, I'm like dreaming of a house build potentially. Yeah, so we've got thoughts. We're excited.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, you're going to have so many skills from living on a boat that I'm sure will transfer.
Yeah, I'm glad we did this first because I think it taught us, it's taught us a lot about how to live well and how to live small and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Amazing. Okay, so now just, I guess, one last question, unless there's anything else you guys want to share. I guess we've touched on it a little bit about just, you know, weather impacts you differently, and you're very much, you know, you describe the ideal, why living on a boat is amazing, floating through kind of wildernessy areas of the UK where no one else is, and it's just untouched. So how do you find that you're, I guess, more in touch with the outdoors? How has it forced, like, nature to kind of be your other living room?
That's a really good description, actually, nature being your other living room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're definitely just more exposed to it. Like, when it rains, we have the beautiful sound of rain on our roof, which we actually love.
Because we basically live in a tin can, so, like, you hear it.
And, like, currently, the windows do sometimes leak and there's drips that come in when it's raining.
And land on my head. Yeah.
We actually have a hole in the door currently that needs to be fixed. So, like, we get a lot of the weather in through the hole of the door.
Is that part of the 15%? That's yeah. waiting to be addressed.
Yeah, it's nothing, basically, babe, right? Yeah, yeah, okay. Definitely didn't make me cold over the winter. Not at all.
No, of course not.
No.
Yeah, and then, like, yeah, I think we just hear all beautiful birds and stuff like that, but also, like, winter... we were just so aware of how little light there was during the day. Mm. It felt like it got light, like, it just felt like I was chopping logs, making a fire, keeping the fire going, and then it was dark, and then it was the same thing again. And, like, yeah it was quite tough because the days were so short, and it felt like we weren't making progress because we were just doing the maintenance of everyday life.
And I think I was always quite confused because a lot of boaters, like even boatyards, kind of shut down a bit for the winter. So you have almost winter jobs and summer jobs, and your summer job is, working with boats. And then during the winter, people do other things, or they hunker down for the winter. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
But now it makes so much sense.
There is quite a nice, like, hibernating, like getting all nesty and like that kind of feeling. Yeah. That
it kind of forces you to flow with the seasons, doesn't it? You can't just carry on as normal.
And we tried to fight it, but you can't. Yeah. Like, you just have to, yeah.
Except your capacity is going to be lower and just enjoy the nice cinnamon and warm things. And
But that's beautiful, isn't it? It's just a totally different pace to, like, we've created in modern world, modern conveniences, things to stop, I guess, the flow of nature so that we can just have exactly what we want, our ideals, no matter what's happening outside. And I guess that element is cancelled for you guys. You're forced to. Yeah, it really matters.
Yeah, we see, like, the sunrises and sunsets. Like, we don't miss them because they're, like, right outside our window. So if there's a beautiful one, we'll always see it because, you know, we have our curtains open. And so, you know, and there was an otter in our marina a few weeks ago. We didn't actually get to see it, but, like...
We didn't hunt.
Mate,
that sounds tried, like we're trying
yeah,
to kill
no,
it.
Yeah.
No, we weren't.
Hunted for it to see it.
And we have, like, a wooden canoe that we go out on when it's really beautiful. And then...
Oh.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And then you just literally, there's water straight out of your door and you just get on the canoe and you're down in beautiful canal systems. And and then...
Is that Pete's time out spot as well?
Yeah.
It's like the proverbial doghouse. Yeah. You need to take a canoe ride, honey.
Take some time.
No, seriously, for real. Take the dog with you, please. Yeah, and then we're just surrounded by fields, and the farmer that owns our marina has longhorn cattle, so that's also just gorgeous, because you just look out and you're like, oh,
yeah,
that's some beautiful cows right there.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and what else do we have?
You guys forage, for food and for art supplies?
Yeah, so actually just after this, we're going to go foraging. We're going to make an oat and nettle and wild garlic.
Yeah, we found a new recipe. We're really excited to
like
try.
A loaf, like some bread. Okay. So we're really excited for that. And then I also forage for like natural pigments. So I went on a walk with these guys and they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, picking up rocks.
Well, you were picking up rocks and it was just flashbacks because Nathan always picks up rocks, but he like licks them and tells you about their history and what volcano or era they come from. But you actually kept them and we're going to make paints out of them or something. You too.
Probably more useful skill, really, isn't it?
Well, I don't know because like there's certain types of rocks. Yeah, well... You know, I don't know. I think your knowledge could be very useful for me because there's certain types of rocks that are like the best, like people look out for them. There's one called, my French accent's going to be terrible, terre verte, which is like a type of rock without any iron in it and it makes green. And I really want that. That's like one of the rarest rock pigments. So if you
I'll
see
get
it,
my geologist on
yeah.
it.
Go find it for me. So yeah, I pick up different, like I pick up clay and like dry it out and like grind it down with my pestle mortar and then make it into like oil paints and make some paintings out of it, which I love because it keeps you really grounded with, like I have paintings made from like places we visited.
Mm-hmm.
So everything has a story. I'm big into storytelling. Yeah. And then Peter also has really got into spoon carving as well. So like if we pass a recently felled tree, he'll like pick up a piece of wood and then make a spoon out of it. And so like, yeah, everything we have in our house has, you know, that's the walk we went on where you picked up a piece of birch and you made it into a spoon. And this is like a painting from like when we went to the Malvern Hills and, you know, so yeah. Mm. And then we're also making nettle soup, mainly because, you know, we're poor, but also because it's fun.
And it's there and it's free.
Actually, it was funny yesterday. I was like, can we have nettles again? And Peter was like, our patch is running low. You know, we got to protect it. I was like, this is where we've got to.
Is it possible to tow? Could you have a little greenhouse and tow it behind your boat?
Yes.
We've made a tiny little greenhouse for our roof, but I reckon we could have a bigger one. I have seen people tow things.
Yeah.
I want a towable chicken coop.
Oh my gosh. I've talked about this and how it's like not, it's not in line with my free range organic. No, they can't get anywhere. They're just on water. Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's
they might be unhappy. Yeah. Unless they're very well trained and every time you moor, you let them out, they free range and then they come back to you in the evening.
And then only becomes like a chicken herder.
Oh, there you go. I mean, you can train chickens to come. That's definitely a thing.
Can you?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, normally they go in their own yard that they know, and then you can call them and they will come. That is a thing.
Okay.
But I'm not sure about letting them loose on the English countryside. I'm not sure about that.
I think the foxes might enjoy that.
The foxes might enjoy that. You might need to...
No, guys, you're giving us an idea.
I'm not sure. There you go. That's a seed to think
project.
About.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh. I think the last thing you guys need is more projects, but there you go.
Yeah, please don't give Peter any more. There's so many half-finished things in our house I can't deal.
I don't know what you mean.
For every 1% he gains, he finds another 2% that he needs to do.
Marry an Enneagram 7, they said. It'll be fine, they said.
Nate can relate. That's so good. All right. So is there anything else you guys want to share? Any other highlights or funny anecdotes?
Do you have any funny anecdotes about Italy? Because you did promise one and now do you have one?
I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, tell us about having a dog in your tiny living space.
Well, he's currently obsessed with the bin.
Oh my goodness. He just like loves getting things out the bin and
it's horrible. It's horrible.
Oh no.
That's not even a funny story. It's just horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean... He's got really familiar and happy with like our local area. So the other day went onto someone else's boat. That's a habit. He's been going onto just like anyone's boat, even if we've never been on the boat before. Like he just like jumps over. And when they have a cat flap, he can like go inside. Yep. So the other day he went into someone's boat through their cat flap while the person was asleep. And ate a whole like stick of their butter.
Yeah.
Like ate it all and then
disgusting.
Threw it up.
Yeah.
In their boat.
I think he threw it up outside, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, no, I was on a walk and this is how an attentive dog mom I am. I was walking along and I was like, his stomach has been making funny noises. And then we were on our way back because we did like a canal loop where we walk one way and then walk back the other. And we'd walk past this very suspicious buttery looking vomit. And I was like, I didn't even notice you throwing that up, but that's gross.
That's disgusting. Oh no.
So yeah.
Oh goodness.
Yeah.
Thankfully we knew the person and they didn't mind.
I mean, I think they mind now after he's eaten three lots of their cat food.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, he has a problem.
He just sees the boat and thinks, home. Sweet.
Yeah, yeah. I've told him it's really rude, but he's not listening. So
he's not.
No. Gentle parenting tactics are not working. I've tried to explain to him. I've said, I know you
Sit
want
him
to.
Down,
talk. You know, yeah.
See what his emotions are.
Yeah, I know you're feeling frustrated about this, but
using I statements. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't find that works with our little one either, actually.
It's so annoying, isn't it? Theory is so good.
Oh, amazing. Okay, so I guess if people have loved listening to you, which I'm sure everyone will have, how can they find you? Can they follow along on your boat journey?
For sure, yeah. So Instagram's probably the number one place to do that. It's @littlefloatinghome.
Because we're at home and we're little and we float.
Oh, man, look at that.
We can put the link to in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll link it. Amazing. Little floating home. And you guys have a YouTube channel too?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, more sporadic posting, but we do. Yeah, that's I'm responsible for that.
It exists. It's out there.
It exists.
So good. Anything else?
No, I think that's it. I'm just going to say, guys, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. I mean, like, I know what's going to happen now. We're gonna end this. We're gonna end, get out of here. And Monica's going to turn to me and she goes, "We're selling our house next month." You say, because you, I mean, and like, and
I was already dreaming because we're thinking we'll probably end up in Canada eventually, and what's going through my head is we should not buy a new house. We should go. We should camp somewhere. Go in the summer and build our own tiny home.
Oh my goodness!
I've got visions. We're gonna have a long talk. Do you guys watch Tiny House Nation?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, we do too. We love it so much.
That's a Netflix recommendation.
Actually, two of our best friends are building a tiny home this summer. So you should definitely ask some questions. Yeah, great.
It is, your guys' story is just so inspiring though. I think for so many different reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the perspective of you just did it.
That's what I love. I don't like planning. Just do it. Just throw yourself in. You'll figure it out.
And then as well, I mean, what you guys have ended up with, I mean, your house, your home is beautiful.
It
looks incredible. And just you guys have seemingly been, for all of us who can sort of see from the outside, it looks like you've been so successful. And of course there have been hard days, hard mornings, you know, ice on the inside of the windows, I'm sure, and sometimes, but like it looks incredible. So you're definitely an inspiration to us.
We can't wait to be invited over to a table rooftop feast. Wink wink.
You will definitely be invited.
Yes. We would love you guys to go. We're going to have to watch Rowan. I can just so imagine him falling into the canal.
Oh my gosh.
Can we train Oatly to be a rescue dog, please?
Yeah, 100%. He hates water right now, but we'll grow him out of it. It'll be fine.
Perfect.
Brilliant.
Yeah, thanks so much,
No,
guys.
Thank you. We've loved it. Thank you so much.
Chat.
Yeah, so good. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're very welcome.
I guess that's it for today. If you have any questions for Emily, MP, and Oatly, let us know by emailing us at Picnic Climbers or finding us on Instagram at Picnic Climbers, and we'll pass it along. Or if you have your own story to share about tiny living, let us know. That's it for this week. See you next week.
Bye for now.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
If you enjoyed listening along, be sure to subscribe and leave a comment on iTunes.
If you want to get in touch, follow us on Instagram at Picnic Climbers or email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com.
Until next time, Picnic Climbers.